Call the tax committee meeting order. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have a presentation on the governor's tax initiatives. First and foremost, Representative Davids, would you like to move the minutes from the Wednesday, March 22nd meeting?
I'll move, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Discussion. Corrections, deletions to the Wednesday, March 22nd minutes? If none, all those in favor of the minutes as written, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those who are opposed, minutes are adopted. Commissioner, you'd be so kind as to come forward. And the chair will move House File 3603. And members, we do have one... We do have one technical amendment, which you should have in front of you. We have, okay. The amendment, the chair will move the A5 amendment. This is just a technical correction to ensure that under the provisions for not taxing pensions for military that we are sure we include the National Guard. So all those, any discussion to the A5 amendment? Any discussion? All those in, I'm sorry, Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted you to know, I stuck a note in front of you there before the committee started that said I had an amendment, and I have the identical amendment as the one you're offering now.
Okay. Appreciate that, Representative Lucheski, just and staff for catching that minor omission that would have left out our National Guard people. So, again, any further questions or discussion to the A5 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed, the amendment is adopted. Members, we're just going to, today, we're going to hear the administration's presentation of the House File 3603. If there are people in the audience who want to offer comment, we will allow that after we have had the department's presentation of the bill. Obviously, as we go through the bill, if committee members have questions or comments, we will take them as various portions of the bill are presented. So, to anyone in the audience who does want to make comments, either for or against the bill or portions of the bill, as I said, we would hopefully keep those comments brief. And we are not going to be taking amendments, additional amendments, or voting on anything in the bill today. So just want to inform everyone of process today. So without further ado, Commissioner, to House File 3603.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jan Solomone. I'm the Commissioner of Revenue. I would like to start by just a higher level elevation of the context of this tax proposal. As you know, the February forecast has produced an additional amount of resources available to all of us. The figure is about $405 million. That's the $317 million that was in the tax relief account, plus the forecast improvement of $88 million. That's after the buyback of the education shifts. So we have the $405 million. The governor of that amount puts $159 million into additional budget reserves, bringing the amount from $653 to $812 million. And if you add the cash flow account, that brings it up to well over $1 billion, $1.16 billion. He also has some spending initiatives that I understand total $197 million. And the rest of the 405 is $49 million, and those are the tax items that I will describe to you today, House Files 3603. I'll rattle off the section numbers as I go through this. Section numbers aren't necessarily in the consecutive order. Sections 1 through 6 of the bill refer to the proposed levy limit. The governor is proposing a levy limit, a relatively traditional levy limit on cities over 20, with cities over 2,500 in population, and counties. This will be a limit on taxes payable in 2007, and it will be basically the previous year's levy with an allowance for inflation and household growth. We recognize at this point, Mr. Chair, since we don't have hard numbers on the effect of any potential federal, the recent federal legislation dealing with health and human services, there may be some adjustment that we need to make in the county levy limit to account for what we later find out are the fiscal implications of the federal bill. So this is the traditional levy limit. We exclude from the limit debt service levies, property taxes levied against referendum market value, unreimbursed costs of natural disasters, errors in prior year levies, and operation and maintenance of qualified county jails. Had this levy limit been imposed last year on taxes payable 2006, we estimate that the levy last year would have been $50 million less than it was. And about 60% of that reduction in levy would benefit residential homestead property. We further know that about 37% of the $50 million reduction would have been county levy reductions and about 63% city levy reductions. Sections 9 through 14.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Representative Mockworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I presume he's moving off of the levy limits. Can we just can we comment, ask questions, and so forth?
Yes. Again, members, I think it would be most advantageous if we, as we go from section to section, if you have questions on each section of the bill, raise them at the time. So, so to the issue of levy limits, Representative Mockworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I have a question and I have a comment. But first of all, if you look on page 5, lines 5.5 to lines 5.7, one of the inflationary factors is the number of households. And I know that's been used a number of times. But why don't we use tax base there rather than growth in households? Because if you have a tax base, let's say it goes up, true growth. This isn't the assessor just coming in, but actually true growth in tax base. Could be housing, could be business, could be a tax increment financing district now on the property tax rolls. That you know, if that was to raise 3%, you could raise your levy 3%. There'd be no change in homeowners. Why do we go with households instead of tax base on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I believe there have been studies that find a correlation between household growth and infrastructure needs of communities. I'm not sure if there's been any work done on the implication of tax base as a proxy for that, for the cost of infrastructure. Obviously, the larger your tax base, the more you your ability to raise revenue at a given tax rate. So I don't know, frankly, Representative Marquardt, whether the base would be a better proxy than household growth.
Well, Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you. And, well, you know, I think, thank you, Mr. Chair, I think it would probably be a better indicator of, because businesses also have infrastructure. I'm just, you know, not to belabor that point. But my comment is, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk about property tax relief. And I presume this is the portion that's supposed to address property tax relief. And I must say, members, I have been a supporter of levy limits, supported in 2001, and in fact, Dilworth in 1997, when I was mayor, we passed the plan that had levy limits in it and a money-back guarantee if we didn't meet our goals. So it was even more restrictive. But just doing levy limits is really just cutting services. And in the long term, actually going to put a higher reliance on property taxes. If we really want to do property tax relief, let's freeze property taxes and then fully fund with inflation local government aid and go back to our promise to fully fund education and then freeze property taxes. That would be true property tax relief. The problem with this current plan that's out here on the governor's proposal is that, first of all, it totally ignores the reality of the 2003 local government aid cuts. And since 2003, there's been over a half a billion dollars cuts in LGA, over $200 million cuts in county, $91 million or so cuts in market value homestead credit, and about $158 million of increased fees put on school property, or not fees, but property tax, almost $1 billion. So I know you're going back to the last year and looking at some that would gain or so forth, but you really have to go back to 2003. Some cities saw huge hits, some saw no hits, some saw slight increases. So we all start at a different base. And the final point I want to make, why I think actually the proposal here is a property tax increase in the long term, is because Tom Stenson talks about those who are in their prime earning years pay about $4,700 into income and sales tax per year, about $4,700. As you become a senior citizen, which, of course, the baby boomers are moving that way, that's about $2,000 that they will pay individually in income and sales. And so over time, as we age, we're going to see a weakening in the income and sales tax base. And what I've seen just within the last 3 years is a shift onto the property taxes. And that's going to hit senior citizens very, very hard. And so this really is not a property tax relief. This is merely continuing to shift state costs on the property taxes. And while I actually agree with the levy limit portion of it, it's not property tax relief unless you're also, the state is making its commitment to fully funding the needs of local government aid and fully living up to its promise to fund education. That way you're not shifting what right now is being funded by income and sales onto property taxes, and that's what this plan does. This plan right here increases property taxes in the state, in rural Minnesota, and I just would be interested in the commissioner's comments of that.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner. Representative Marquardt, you're right, it is about property tax relief. The question is, how do you deliver property tax relief? If we had time, I could go through a long litany of our long history of trying to provide property tax relief. And it's cost the state a lot of money, billions and billions of dollars, not even counting education aids. And the levy keeps popping back up. And so what we really need is sort of some systemic property tax relief. And I've said this for years, property tax relief that results from taxpayers engaged with local officials and setting a local levy that they're comfortable with. We simply can't continue to buy down property taxes year after year. We don't get permanent relief in the sense that we're comfortable with the property tax. So it is about property tax relief, but it's more importantly about how we get long-term property tax relief. And this isn't a long-term levy limit. This is a levy limit for taxable year 2007 only. And then presumably we'll have a debate maybe next year about what do we do about property taxes. We know we have a debate every year about how to control property taxes. And if you look through our history, every major state tax increase going back well into the 60s has been related to an attempt to find money to buy down the levy, only to have to come back and find other state tax increases to buy down the levy. With regard to the 03 cuts, those were very dramatic cuts by any historical standard, cuts in LGA and other local aid programs. But as a percentage of most communities' levy plus aid, those cuts were relatively, I won't say modest because they were a challenge, but they were within the range of the budget cuts the state was making. And those communities who took those cuts seriously and managed their budgets for the long term rather than just doing some temporary budget cuts found themselves in reasonably good shape coming out of that. I think it's the communities that did temporary adjustments to those budget cuts, those aid cuts, the ones that had more difficulties and where we saw probably the bigger bounce back of the levies. But when at the time we did those cuts using data from the auditor's office, we were looking at cuts averaging, and again, the cut in aid as a percentage of levy plus aid, which is a crude proxy for spending, in the 3-6% range, community by community. So I don't think those were as draconian as many would have us believe. But clearly they were a challenge, as the state was challenged.
Okay. Representative Marquardt, any follow-up?
Well, no, that's fine. We've had the LGA debate many times, and I appreciate the commissioner's comments. I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but that's another day. Thank you.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Salamone, I'm concerned about your statement that this is justified because the households you claim are related to infrastructure needed growth. Well, there's some cities in this state that infrastructure isn't the major problem. In Minneapolis, most of the general fund ends up going towards law enforcement and things like that. And households obviously doesn't have anything to do with that. And so there's no total disconnection there. And yet you're limiting them. And then what even gets me more is I think you said you exclude market value levy, which would mean that you can go and tax households at the same rate as businesses, which is a break for businesses. And at the same time, I know from a fact that our costs for businesses are skyrocketing for the amount of police and law enforcement costs. So there's a total disconnect between what you claim and what the real facts are for some major cities. I'm sure St. Paul is not unlike Minneapolis, although I think it's certainly doesn't have the problems Minneapolis does. As of a couple weeks ago, in North Minneapolis, we had a shooting every day this year. I don't think you face that in some of the other cities in the distant suburbs. And so I see a complete disconnect for some cities between your justification for this and the reality.
Commissioner Representative Mullery, I don't disagree that this is complex stuff. And this is a traditional levy limit. We were not trying to sort of get very complex in how we do this, trying to keep it simple. As you know, we pay aids for cities, and the city aid formula has a variable that recognizes crime. So there's presumably some compensation there. Clearly, there are items of the city budget that you could identify and say, well, there need to be categorical aids, perhaps. Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mullery.
Maybe I could ask Ms. Dalton, but I didn't think crime was in the formula, is it?
Ms. Dalton is...
For cities?
Correct.
Cities does not include crime in the formula.
Well, okay, members, again, we're talking about levy limits. Let's not have a broadened discussion about property taxes, LGA, school aids formula. Let's just talk about whether we like levy limits or we don't like levy limits, whether we like the proposed levy limits. That's, as I said, we can talk about property taxes from now until May 22nd, but...
Mr. Chairman, we are talking about the justification for the levy limits, and this is definitely does not fit all cities, and it's very obvious, and the justification does not fit cities. And he brought up the argument of levy or of local government aid, and so I think that's necessary to point out that that also didn't fit his justification.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dalton, you want to give us a what's included and not included in the LGA determinations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Mullery is right. There's an accident rate, but that's a road accident that does not include crime rates.
I think for Minneapolis we should include homicide rate. So anyway, I'm sorry. Representative Marquardt, one brief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. One last comment. Mr. Chair, it is important, though, that we talk about LGA and that, because the inference here by just slapping on levy limits is that it's these wide-eyed liberal mayors and commissioners causing our property tax increases.
When in fact, with me.
It's in fact, you know, there's other things that's related that to that, including the cuts that we've seen in aid. So that's the reason I think it has to be brought up.
I think everyone on the committee and probably everyone in the audience understands the interrelationship to some extent between all of these factors. So no two cities are exactly the same. Representative Vanderveer.
I'll pass this.
Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. on the levy limit issue, and by the way, Commissioner Salamone, I was glad to hear you say you're going to look at the county problem, because I do have an amendment on the county issue, and we could talk about that. I can show it to you. The federal action is going to hurt counties dramatically, and I think if we don't build in some relief for that problem within levy limits, we'll just create another problem. But on levy limits, I have voted for them in the past, and I think you can justify them when you're making a significant change in the property tax system. For example, in 2001, I can't justify it now. I agree with Representative Marquardt. I think this is just it's not property tax relief, is what I would say. But I have a concern in how the bill is drafted, that it appears to me by using KO6 that what's really happening is you're forcing cities to use it or lose it, and we're actually going to see some cities go out and raise taxes to get in under the levy limit closing. And I know folks would like to use that argument to say, well, that's the problem. These cities are out of control. You know, actually, the legislature has made their lives so uncertain that when they get an opportunity, they have to take it, because they never know what's going to happen next. And I guess the big picture for me on levy limits is not only why are they, why is it drafted to treat cities so unfairly or differently across the state, but it seems to me that, while Representative Marquardt raised all the issues, market value credit, LGAs, in the near last year, the real big property tax increase wasn't cities and counties, it was schools. And that was mandated by the Minnesota legislature. So it seems to me that if we really want to get at this, we would turn back those levies that was put across the state on school districts. So can you give me some insight as to why the governor's proposal isn't getting at the school levy problem, since that's where the legislature chose to mandate property tax increases?
Well, Representative Lincheski, I think the word mandated them. I mean, we may have put them in an untenable position, but I don't think we told them they had to raise their levies. So mandate isn't the correct word. But Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, first let me apologize for misleading the committee on the LGA formula. I forgot my own formula that I constructed in 2003. We did put in a new variable for accidents to pick up some of that effect. Sure. I didn't.
Take this for me.
Okay. With regard to Representative Lincheski's comments, school levies are primarily, for the most part, formula-driven, mandated by the legislature. So I think part of the rationale for not putting schools in this limit, I think it's explained by that. The school levy increase was clearly a big part of the 06 levy increase. Nearly half the increase was schools. And they did get new legislative authority to levy, and they exercised the authority. They weren't required to do that, but they did take advantage of it. You're right that levy limits tend to cause cities to levy to the limit. That happened the last time we had levy limits in, I think, 2001. A significant number of cities and counties went to the limit. But this is a very liberal levy limit by even maybe historical standards. Household growth is projected to be 1.3% for that period of time. Inflation 5.45%. So there's, if they go to the max, they'll be going to 6.75% increase in levy. That's a pretty healthy increase in levy. So I don't think it's as constraining as many of the members think it is. It's really designed to catch the bigger increases that we saw in the 06 in the 06 levies. So I think those are some of the logic that was behind this approach and this particular kind of levy limit.
Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I hear you saying that if we're going to have levy limits, this one isn't as that bad compared to how levy limits have been executed in the past. And I agree with you. I just think we shouldn't have them at all. But I do want to ask you specifically in the levy limits section of the bill on page 2, line 2.15, you're taking out the Minnesota State Armory levy. And I think that I'm hoping that's just an oversight, and will create a lot of problems for the communities that have those armory facilities in them. Can you just comment on why that's being taken out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Chesky, I saw that. That was in the nature of an oversight, I understand. We do exempt generally debt levies, and it's sort of analogous to that. We are not, our feet are not in stone in terms of what we've put in and out in terms of some of these levies.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lucheski.
I just want to understand, I think there's some confusion. It could mean that and I don't technically know what it says, so I'm asking you. It could mean that you're exempting armories from levy limits, but I read it to mean you're actually eliminating the special levy for armories. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, I understand we're taking it off the list of special levies that would be exempted from the limit. And it may be something you want to put back in.
Mr. Chair,
maybe
if Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton can comment on that. I think it's important to all the members across the state who have armories to know exactly what's taking place in this provision.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission lets bonds for local armories, and those bonds are backed by the local government levies. There's a contract between the local government and the State Armory Commission. There's about $5.5 million in those bonds out there right now, with authority for up to $15 million of those. They are the same as any other type of bond that cities or counties might have, and so they probably should be excluded the same way other debt levies are excluded from the levy limit.
Okay. Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that answer. I also have a similar question on lake improvement districts and the sewer that are being stricken in the bill. And if you could comment, I'm really unclear on what's happening with the Lake Improvement District. Maybe Representative Dorman would have some insight in this, because he had his community came and asked for a local sales tax option to fund their Lake Improvement District, and I believe that was granted. But this is, taking a look at all those levies out there for Lake Improvement Districts and sewer districts, and it seems to me that there's an unfair treatment going on where those who have them within their county aren't going to get to levy because they're going to fall under the county levy limits, but those who have independently formed a district on their own are going to be able to continue to levy. And so therefore, I think we're going to see a lot of cities, if this goes on, have to reconstitute a whole bunch of new taxing authority to get around the levy limits. And so to me, it just seems like it's not working. So maybe you can tell me what the governor is proposing in this area.
Commissioner? Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, generally we were just trying to tighten it up. Certainly if there are some of those levies that you want to have excluded from the limit, we would probably not have an issue with it. I think you're bringing up a good point in terms of the substitution of special authorities.
Okay. Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm going back to a couple things you said. You talked about how generally you said some cities have done, good things and been responsible and handled their cuts on a long-term basis, and other cities maybe had done something more on a temporary basis. And the levy limits you have proposed here would treat those good actors and bad actors the same. I'm wondering what the rationale for that is.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, we weren't, we're certainly not in the position to certify who's been naughty and who's been nice. Certainly not our role. And I was simply speculating about how cities might have wound up in different situations based on how they managed those big cuts in 2003. Yes, I mean, we are moving forward, whether you're good or bad, quote unquote, and you're under the same, you're being treated under the same law.
Commissioner, I let me ask this a different way. If you had done what I think you said the good actors were doing and you had the bad actors, wouldn't that mean that the bad actors, at least in your mind and possibly the governors would still have all that fat hanging around their city budget, and wouldn't they be able to handle this easier than the quote-unquote good actors? So aren't you penalizing the cities that did, at least in your mind, the positive approach? I guess I'm trying to understand why you'd want to penalize them.
Commissioner?
Well,
if your theory is correct.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, bottom line, whether a levy is acceptable or not is really ought to be a local conversation. The levy limit provides, again, 6.75% growth if you go to the limit. And that doesn't count the special levies that are allowed.
Representative Dorman.
Let me go back again now. I think what you just said, that the local levy should be a local decision. Then what are we doing talking about this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, I didn't mean to minimize the tremendous amount of interaction between the state and the locals in the whole property tax state aid relationship. I was simply saying that once you account for state aids, eventually you get down to the fact that there need to be local decisions made about local spending and about the resulting levy. And once the state has done its part, that ought to be a local issue. I've said that for years, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dorman.
You know, Mr. Chair, I feel like I'm in sort of a feral universe or something. I'm at home, you know, the city council and county exclaim, geez, we didn't do it, it's all those crazy guys in St. Paul. I listen to the governors and others, and they say, boy, it isn't us, it's a local decision. And I think the reality is that it's somewhere in between. Somehow I got a feeling that we're going to see campaign ads in the future saying, you know, don't blame me, you know, legislature didn't enact levy limits or something. But I hope I'm wrong, and that's not what this is about. But it sure seems that way, because on one hand you tell me that, you know, 2001, we're going to be great, we're going to have all this local control, and, you know, boy, they're going to be on their own now, and let's whack them in 2003, and it's going to be up to the cities what they do. And then a couple years later we're back here saying, well, except for this, now we're going to have, I'm never sure which, if we're in favor of control or local control. I think that I have a hard time figuring out which day it is, because some days we're in favor of local control, other days we're not. Is this local control, or what are we dealing with? How would you typify this, local control or just control?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, you're referring to the levy limit?
Yes.
It sets some upper limit. It is a form of control, obviously, but a fairly generous one by historical standards, and it's designed only to roll back the more the larger levy increases that might occur in 2007. There's still plenty of discretion and plenty of room under the limit for communities to do to have a lot of flexibility in how they manage their budget. When you have communities that are as dependent as they are in Minnesota on state aid, when the state gets into budget difficulties, it becomes an issue for the whole state and local system, and that's what we went through in 2003. And we tried to manage that as best we could. And many communities did a good job. Maybe some didn't. And we're moving forward, dealing now with 07. And I think it's impossible to sort of have a levy limit that brings a precise level of justice to every community based on their previous actions.
Representative Dorman, I don't think you need to worry. The truth and taxation statements come out after the election's over, so it'll all be moot by the time the November election's held. But Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Tell me, last year with some of the LGA changes that we made, I think, were they a temporary basis, or how did that work? I think some cities received some additional LGA. How does that impact that LGA, and how does it impact their levy limit on cities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, my recollection was we increased LGA by $48 million last session. Much of it, I believe, went to Minneapolis and St. Paul. Not sure. I believe it was a permanent increase. It's in the base.
Louder.
I'm sorry?
Ms. Dalton, can you just once again take us down memory lane. So it's been a long time since we've been here in the cash committee. What was the LGA increase, and is it in the base?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there was an LGA increase of $48 million. It is a permanent increase in terms of total appropriation. However, because of some caps in that limited how much individual cities could get, there were some cities that got some fairly substantial one-time windfalls, which we've been going to lose them this next year, and Minneapolis is one to the tune of about $9 million extra of LGA.
Representative Dorman.
And so Mr. Chair, Commissioner, what does the city of Minneapolis do? Do they get to levy that whole $9 million back, plus the inflationary increase you have in there, or how are they supposed to deal with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, you're referring to Tax 07 or 06?
Well, let's see, they got the Chair, Commissioner, I think the LGA increase for last year would be for Tax Year 06. And so, and if the levy limits are based on what for 07 for them?
It would be the same as for all the other cities over 2,500, the maximum increase of estimated 6.75%. There's no special recognition of the LGA change. It's just purely levy driven.
Representative Dorman.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Salamone, they're going to lose that $6 or $9 million in the city of Minneapolis. If there's no other changes, we just leave it alone. We don't put any more money in the system. We don't take any more money out. City of Minneapolis loses $9 million in LGA. And how do they absorb that?
Mr. Chair, I suppose they could levy it if it's within the cap that we're proposing.
Could you have us speak louder, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry. Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, as I said, they could possibly levy that increase if it's within the cap that we're proposing.
Representative Dorman, I have a solution. We can just add an amendment here that would allow anyone to exceed the levy cap through a referendum.
Right.
Okay, Representative,
I give up.
You haven't, I don't think we've solved that problem. Representative Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back to the education levy for just a minute. The Commissioner Salamone, you said that that had amounted to about half the statewide increase. Are you including voter-approved levies in that number?
Mr. Chair, yes, that does include all school levies. I think the increase was almost $235 million.
And Mr. Chair, Commissioner, the reason I ask is because we did some, looked at a number of districts. I think in mine that if the school districts had implemented all of the legislative newly authorized levies, it would have been, I think, 2.7% if they maximized. So I think the statewide was quite a bit. It was somewhere around 10 or 11. Is that statewide average increase overall?
Mr. Chair, for the truth in taxation levies, I believe the projected increase was 10.2, and the final levy came in at 9.1.
About 9.1. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. So I think the legislative authorized, not mandated, was, at least in my district, about 2.7% of that total. So, thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion on the levy limit portion of the legislation? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know who this question is for, but prior to cutting the local government aids to balance the budget, there was a certain level of local government aids. How much have we restored local government aids to where we were prior to the cuts? Are we anywhere near restoring all of it, or part of it, or 20% of it? Or
Probably Ms. Dalton, you want to try to respond to Representative Earhart?
Mr. Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, we've restored a little over a third of the cut from 2003.
Thank you.
Further comments or questions to the levy limit portion? Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, and that was a good question by Representative Earhart, because I think it was $120 million a year, wasn't it? $240 a biennium, Ms. Dalton? And we've restored $40 million. But, you know, during that time, there's also been inflation. And, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Salamone, the other day in Representative Vanderveer's subcommittee, we had four cities come in and ask for a local sales tax option. Representative Dorman, you'd be interested in this, because every time they asked to implement a local sales tax, I asked them how much LGA they had been cut, and I think Cloquet's answer was $1.5 million a year, and Owatonna's was $1 million, but Representative Ruth was quick to point out that they've almost gotten all of that back now. $2002 or $2003, it wouldn't be the case. Winona, I think, was down $1.5 million. Representative Vanderveer, if I'm not mistaken, in Duluth. Representative Jarvis was in with his bill. I don't know how much they're down, but it's millions. So they're in there, and they're asking to replace one unfair tax, property tax that's escalating to try to keep up to their LGA cuts, with another unfair tax, Representative Salamone, a local sales tax. But, you know, it's disappointing to hear you and the governor even say that you haven't had an impact on property taxes in this state, because you have. I would say that probably for the governor to say that it's local decisions that have fueled this, when in fact they've lost these millions of dollars in their budget, is at the best embellishing, sanding the truth a little bit, or possibly even an outright fib. What do you think it is, Representative Commissioner Salamone? Is it any of those three things to say that, you know, $80 million still a year of LGA cuts to our communities across the state hasn't impacted local property taxes?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina, it's none of those. As I said earlier, and I was stating a fact, and we can pull out the old charts from 2003, the aid cuts we did in 2003 as a percentage of levy plus aid, which is kind of a big chunk of total city revenues, were in the neighborhood of 3 to 6%. And I can, if you want, I can get what the average was and what the median was. 3 to 5%, 3 to 6% of their levies plus aid. And so those were at least as manageable in terms of managing the budget deficit as what the state had to deal with in 2003. It was a very, very tough year, and I don't need to go through that whole litany of how big that challenge was.
Well,
but we seem to have mined our way out of it.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Salamone, I've said many times on this committee that averages just don't work, because, you know, I don't know how Minneapolis was affected severely, and I don't know what it works out there. And I know in Virginia, which is my biggest city, that when you lose $2 million of aid in a, I believe, about a $9 or $10 million budget, that's more than 3%. You know. So you can talk about averages, but it goes back to my statement, Mr. Chair. If you want to talk about the average size of a member of the Iron Range delegation, and you put me and Representative Dill together, the average size is 6'1" and 230 pounds. And then I walk in the room, and it skews everything. So, you know, you can talk about averages. You can try to rationalize this. But when you pull $80 million out of property taxes, basically what you did annually, cities have to make that up somewhere. And now with these levy limits, it even compounds the problem, Commissioner. And you forgot about, you know, some of these cities didn't levy or didn't increase their levies, didn't take into account inflation in their levies, and you're restricting them now to last year's or this year's inflation or implicit price deflator, which is going to severely impact some of the communities in this state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubina, I certainly would be happy to provide the committee a city-by-city description of the numbers I've been talking about in terms of budgetary impacts of the 03 cuts, so you can get beyond the average and see the actual city-by-city variation. If that's helpful, I'd be happy to provide that.
Well, Mr. Chair, we can get that from staff, and we have it on there from staff, but that was my point. My point was averages are averages and not reality sometimes, because I'm not 6'1 and 230 pounds.
We're glad to know that. Okay.
Further discussion on the levy limit section of the bill? If not, I'm sorry, Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Chairman Krenke. One other piece in the levy limits, Commissioner Salamone, and maybe for Mr. Manson, and I'm glad Representative Abrams just walked in the room. On page 2 of the bill, you're striking the last line, which is the abatement part of the law related to levy limits. And TIF is exempt from levy limits, and it appears that this language, you're going to put abatements under levy limits. And I think you're going to have an unintended consequence here of encouraging more TIF and discouraging abatement, and I wondered if that was your intention to do that.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lancheski, I don't think that was the intent, and we didn't discuss that specific issue. So it's another one of those things we may want to look at and adjust to your level of comfort.
Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Salamone, if cities have done abatements and then you change the law on them, isn't that rather unfair to them?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I suppose that would be true, and we might want to make those put that exemption in.
Members, any further discussion to the levy limit section of the bill? If not, Commissioner, let's move on to the next section, the federal update.
Sections 9 and 14 relate specifically to federal conformity on the married joint standard deduction. As you know, we did not conform to 2002 federal law. And the federal government changed the standard deduction. This provision, sections 9 and 14, would make the Minnesota standard deduction for married joint filers the same as the federal standard deduction. It affects about 420,000 low and middle income non-itemized married couples filing jointly. The average impact is $68 per family. The cost in biennium 06-07 is $28.7 million. So nearly half of the total cost of the governor's tax packages for this item. It conforms prospectively only at $28.7 million in the 06-07 biennium. There's a lot of detail I could get into here, but basically that's the thrust of it. It's treating only a portion of the marriage penalty issue. There's a marriage penalty built into the rate brackets, although we have a Minnesota credit that washes that out. There's also some residual marriage penalty in how the interaction of itemized deduction interacts with the standard deduction. But this really is biting off the biggest piece and the one that would be the simplest for us to reverse out on the tax form.
Representative LaForce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is probably the most relevant place to ask my question because I don't see the issue I'm concerned about in the bill necessarily. I'm wondering, Commissioner, why AMT reform has been deemed unworthy of support in this bill.
Commissioner.
Chairman, Representative DeForest, you're right, that's an important issue. I know very well how important that is to the CPA Society, for example, and others. It's a growing issue. There are many, many other good things that I'm sure the governor would have liked to have done, and he had to make a judgment call on which was most important, and this certainly affects an awful lot of people, and it's for some a fairly big number. We're talking about a $1,300 add back that was part of the current filing. So I won't deny that that's an important issue. If we had more money on the table, I suppose we'd be looking at that as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Salmon, I'm glad to hear you say that, because while we certainly don't have an issue that is of the same magnitude as the mushrooming federal problem, there's no doubt that this continues to be a problem as time goes on, and a serious problem, and kicking the can down the road, I would submit, is not the preferred public policy for this issue. So I'll simply leave it at that I find it disappointing that this issue was ignored in the governor's bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very quick. Just to that point, Commissioner Salamone, I just wanted to make clear that it's not just the CPA Society and interest groups. It's also constituents throughout Minnesota and throughout the country that are very concerned over AMT and the potential mushrooming of that impact. So I just want to put that on the record.
Representative Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, could you talk a little bit more about the marriage penalty and ways that we could go back for this year to rebate or get back to the taxpayers the married filing jointly conformity that they lost by the Senate refusing to go along with the House position last year?
Commissioner, I think I'll have Jack Manson provide some of that background. And I know staff, your staff have done a pretty exhaustive memo on the options there.
Mr. Chairman, Jack Manson, the Department of Revenue. And actually, there's kind of three pots of taxpayers. The first pot is kind of taxpayers that are kind of the strict standard deduction filers. And those are the ones that just add back the difference between their federal standard deduction and Minnesota standard deduction and add that back on line three of the Minnesota return. If you wanted to give the money back to them, that's the simplest group to deal with. You could just issue checks to that group. You could do that. And I believe that covers about 80% of the individuals. So it's about 80% of the dollars to 80% of the taxpayers, that one pool. There's also two other pools of taxpayers, and it gets more complicated and more difficult for us to administer. But the second pool is individuals who have itemized deductions, and then they're required to add back their state income tax if it exceeds the standard deduction. And if that increases, they would add back less. So they actually would be entitled to more of their itemized deductions. That's that second pool, and that gets a lot more complicated to deal with. Then the third pool is how this impacts our state marriage bonus credit. And that's where you've got to actually split the wages and interact the standard deduction with that. So if you wanted to deal with 80% of the problem to 80% of the taxpayers, that's pretty doable. The rest of it's pretty complicated to do unless you do it more as subtraction on maybe their 2006 return. And we haven't looked at that a lot, but that could be a possibility.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up. So I gather for the 80%, I'm thinking for most people it's all the same check size that you send out for them pretty much, but for these other 20%, it probably varies by tax return. Would that be fair to say?
Exactly, yeah. So it would be a different amount, and because the itemized deduction interplay and then the marriage credit and the wages, and so yes.
Thank you.
Representative Lucheski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, I don't think that's correct. And maybe we can have staff comment on that because of the three different brackets. After you have to do the add back, then you have to put what bracket, you have to multiply it by your bracket. So I think you'd have three different size checks. But on the same issue, and Representative Knobloch, we had a conversation on the floor, and you were right on the marriage penalty issue that you could deal with it going forward. But I have that same question that you're raising now is, you know, why is the governor not dealing with the current tax year? I know it, the up next year is a $28 million problem, for AMT. The current, not AMT, for the marriage penalty, the current year is about $30 million, and I just heard you, Mr. Manson, talk about how complicated it is, but it is something that should have been addressed last year, and I know Representative Knobloch stated it was the Senate, you know, refusing to go along with House, and that's certainly true in the wee hours of the Tax Conference Committee. It is also true that the Senate fully funded that immediate to correcting that problem in their Senate tax bill. So both sides, I think, can argue that the other side didn't do it. They did have it in the Senate tax bill, and they paid for it. But my issue with the governor's proposal is why not conform retroactively, even though it's complicated. Representative Knobloch told us on the floor yesterday you could use the $317 million that's being moved into the general fund to do so, and it seems to me it's a fair thing to do.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanchesky, the offer that was made at 4 or 5 in the morning was fully funded.
Yes.
And the other conferees around the table will acknowledge that after I was asked to help out, I spent a considerable amount of time talking to the Department of Revenue, talking to the Department of Finance, talking to the Governor's Office. You may recall that it was in July, so they had a pretty good idea as to where the books were going to close as of July 1st. So the House had it fully funded, number one. Number two, in order to be fair, when Representative Knobloch uses the word Senate, I think it applies to all five Senate conferees, not four of the five, but five of the Senate conferees. And quite frankly, this little bit of unfairness for people who are standard deduction type taxpayers on the heads of those five people, because they had their opportunity, Representative Lanchesky. We can give them their home phone numbers too, if that would help.
Chair.
Representative Lanchesky.
Just in response, and hopefully Commissioner Salamone can answer this, because Representative Knobloch, I think, is asking the same thing. I mean, I hear the tension there, Representative Abrams, and I agree with you that the House did offer it and the wee hours fully funded. I agree with you. And the Senate rejected it. But what I was stating is the Senate also fully funded it on the Senate floor in their Senate omnibus tax bill. So both sides can say the other didn't do it. It's the only point I was making. But even though it may be on the heads of whatever group it's on, it's still something that can be fixed right now, this year. And the statement on the House floor yesterday was we could use the 317 to do it. And I'm just curious as to why the governor isn't interested in doing that. Is he selecting something else as a higher priority, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanchesky, I think the short answer is yes. He has other priorities. This is clearly an important one, and it was important for him to fix it moving forward. Hopefully we'll come back next year and we'll have a good budget forecast and we'll build the budget and maybe find the money to do it then. But it is pretty much the same answer I gave Representative DeLaForce. There are a lot of good things we could have done if we had more money. And the 317 is, yeah, as the governor, as I said earlier when I started out, he's put $159 million in the budget reserve, increased it by that amount, and then he has another expenditure initiative. So it's a matter of making those judgments, and you all have a chance to do your own version of that, I guess.
Okay, Commissioner, let's proceed then.
Sections 7, 8, 11, 18, 19, and 24 contain the remainder of the conformity items. These are the three federal bills that have passed since April 15th of 2005. It's the energy, we loosely call the energy bill, the Katrina bill, and the Gulf Opportunity Zone bill. The governor is proposing to adopt the federal provisions of all of those three bills, and they have a fiscal impact of $7.7 million in the 06-07 biennium. There's a lot of detail in each of those bills, and if the committee wants to delve into that, we can get staff up here to help out.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping to avoid delving into too much of the detail, but Commissioner, can you talk a little bit? Do we know how firm those numbers are, the $7.7 million or whatever it is? Do we have a way to feel confident that that's kind of not too high, not too low? Were there... I guess I'm trying to understand where that number is coming from, and if we're basing it off of last year's filings or where it's coming from.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I know from my history with our research division, I used to direct that unit years ago. We usually get good numbers from the federal government when they adopt these provisions, so we have the national cost of these provisions, and part of it is just factoring that out. Now, maybe Paul Wilson or Jack could add to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fools. Yeah, that's basically it. Our numbers are based on the federal numbers, and theirs are deemed official, and that's kind of just what we do is allocate the federal number to the state of Minnesota.
Representative Fools.
Mr. Chair, so if Minnesotans were more generous with Katrina relief, those numbers might be a little low. If they were a little less generous nationally than some of our neighboring states, that number might be a little high. Is that? I'm just trying to get a sense for how real that number is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, to the extent that we have data that would allow us to make an adjustment off of the federal proration, we do that, and maybe Paul can add more.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Paul Wilson, Director of Research at Department of Revenue. Each of these items is adjusted separately for federal numbers adjusted separately for each item. The Katrina relief, the biggest cost there is on the interpersonal income tax side. It does have to do with charitable contributions. But those charitable contributions were not directly tied to Katrina relief. It basically changed the deductibility of itemized deductions by taking some limits off and by not phasing out the itemized deductions at higher income levels. You didn't have to give money to Katrina relief to get those benefits. And as a result, that particular item, we did not scale that down for participation in Katrina relief. It was unlike the earlier tsunami relief. We don't really have to estimate what was given to Katrina for that. It really is what is happening to charitable contributions in Minnesota. So we didn't make an adjustment really for participation in Katrina relief directly. In most of the other cases, the federal numbers were adjusted down except where it was Katrina specific or Gulf specific. In those cases, we did assume a much lower impact for companies or individuals who had property in the Gulf region.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Chairman, Commissioner, the three provisions, the Energy Tax Incentive Act, the Katrina Emergency Tax Relief, and the Gulf Opportunity Zone Act, raises another issue, and that is that I understand that those items were placed on the state income tax return without a letter from the chairs, and basically with just notification of Representative Krenke and Senator Pogemiller. In the past, Commissioner, and you're not the only commissioner, commissioners have come and talked to the chairs, and sometimes if it was a big issue, and big issue would probably defined as more than $500,000, the ranking members of the committee prior to doing that. And I think that I would suspect that Senator Pogemiller he'll be able to speak for himself and probably speak a little bit more forcefully, but I really do think, Commissioner, that the better way to handle those issues is by a chair letter. We certainly don't want to inconvenience taxpayers to an extent, but when you start taking a look at the dollar numbers involved here, those dollars are already out the barn. I guess technically if the department wanted to, if the legislature adjourns without acting on these items, they could audit those returns and send deficiency notices. But that's after the administration has taken the action of telling people that they could take those deductions. So I would really hope that there's a little bit of circumspection about items of this nature. Even they agree.
We'll recess the committee.